T-Mobile's unlimited plan costs $95 per month for a smaller network, plus monthly taxes and fees. It's enough to wreck your day. Cricket's unlimited plan gives you a bigger network for $25 less per month with monthly taxes and fees included. Cricket Wireless, something to smile about.
Download speeds max of 8 megabits per second LTE and 4 megabits per second 4G. Price comparison based on one smartphone line with unlimited plan. Mobile hotspot not available. Activation, other fees, and restrictions apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Terms, features, and restrictions subject to change. See store for details.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Spotlight Show. You can check me out on Twitter, at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google+, and also Periscope, at Total Tutor. And you got to remember to follow this guy, at Rob Roselli, or boxofsunglasses.com. So I'm excited to welcome to the program, Rob Roselli. Rob, how are you? And I don't know, is it the calm before the storm? Kind of a slow week politically in a way, I guess, leading up to New York.
We're talking about the so-called presidential election.
Yes.
I mean, it is a it's a joke. It's a circus. It's all it is. And look, I mean, whoever wins, which won't be Trump, it doesn't matter anyway, because not one candidate, including Trump, nobody. Is talking about eliminating the Federal Reserve, the so-called Federal Reserve System, which is a scam in and of itself. It is not federal. There are no reserves. The only one that approached talking about it was former candidate Ron Paul, who was effectively shut out of the presidential election, period.
Right.
This is trying to shut Trump out, and maybe they can't because he had too much money or too much popularity already or whatever the reason, but they're certainly trying to stop him because at least he's different than the rest of these bozos. But it doesn't matter, and I think tonight maybe we can discuss the Federal Reserve System, its history, and what it really means, and to maybe it'll explain or help explain my cynicism with this whole thing. That really is a joke. There's no other words that would apply here.
Right, and I hear you're saying, Rob, and so you feel that most of these people are going to just spend money. So there's just no other. They really were in deep trouble, regardless of who gets elected, possibly. There's going to be spending, and they're not going to be concerned about our debt at all.
That's exactly correct. We've been our economy is effectively it's a setup, and I mean that literally. It's just if you go back to the history, let me explain. The Federal Reserve System, I mean, first of all, it's a consortium of privately held banks. I mean, nobody, of all the conspiracy kooks and so-called and people that I've read and listened to, nobody can really point to who the owners of the Federal Reserve System or the banks are. The private stockholders of this corporation, I've seen rumors, I've seen people, maybe Goldman Sachs, Barclays, Rothschild banking interest over in Europe, and J.P. Morgan Chase, and whoever. But maybe that's not the most important aspect here. But again, the Federal Reserve System. Is not federal. It's not a publicly held bank. It's not a government's bank. And there are absolutely no reserves. Okay, it is a 100% debt-based system. So that right there ought to tell you something that the people that invented this thing back in really over 100 years ago at this point knew exactly what they were doing, and they knew exactly what to call it. They called it the Federal Reserve System because it conveys the impression to most of the imbecile majority, which would be people that actually think that the presidential election matters, which is like 98% of the population, but it conveys to them the impression that it really is, it's a public institution owned by the government, and nothing can be further from the truth. Okay, so just to give a brief history, with central banking or so-called central banks is say around 1600. And this is a modern central banking system. And obviously, you can go back in history, really almost the beginning of time, and central banks have been at the, or some form of central bank have been behind governments, really going back to the history of man. I mean, they're author out there. I think his name is Joseph Farrell, and I have some of his books, and I read parts of them, and one of the books is called Babylon Banksters, and he looked back into the history of really bankers and banking and how they've really manipulated the currencies and economies of cultures going all the way back to ancient Babylon, ancient Egypt, on this sort of thing. And that's all well and good, but for our purposes tonight, let's just say the modern system of central banking began around 1600, in the 1600s, okay? And this is where, bankers came up with the idea that, hey, we can lend money to governments that are busy fighting wars, over in Europe, and charge them interest on it and call it central banking, and we can make money on this, and, an interest payment and this sort of thing. And that's exactly what they started doing. The Bank of England, Bank of Holland, Bank of Italy, so-called, all these central banks, they were making money, loaning money to governments all over Europe, and really the source of their money a lot of times was that people would deposit their gold. Okay, so people, carrying their gold around and, on their persons where they could be robbed or they could lose it or whatever, they deposit it at banks, and banks come up with the issue gold certificates. And banks, first of all, come up with the idea of, wait a second, we can generate more gold certificates than we actually have gold, and then loan it out as money and charge interest on it, with the taking the risk that not everybody would come back at the same time for their gold, and there wouldn't be enough, with gold certificates to redeem for their gold, and there wouldn't be enough gold there to give back to people. That wouldn't happen all at once. They did take a little bit of a gamble. So that, in general, explains the origins of the Federal Reserve System and something else called fractional reserve lending, which we'll get into in a little bit. But, I would say for the best detailed account of this scam, there's a book out there called The Creature from Jekyll Island by Edward Griffin. Okay? And it really does an excellent job of going into the history and explain everything, which I'm not going to do here, and we only have an hour, but that's the general history of central banking, and the most famous, again, would probably be the Bank of England, who was loaning money to England to finance all their wars, in the British Empire, and the sun never sets on the British Empire, this sort of thing. But and the most famous banking name over in Europe, which started to emerge, say, in the 1700s, was commonly known as the Rothschild, with the Rothschilds, and they had, eventually there was the original Rothschild, who started, I believe, in Germany, and they eventually had five sons, and he sent them out to run the central banks of major European countries. There's five of them, I think I want to say England, Austria, France, Italy, England, France, Italy, Germany, Austria. I want to say those are the five countries. Whatever they were, okay, they set up central banks, you know, i.e. private banks that loan money to governments in those five countries. Okay, and then they started almost immediately trying to infringe on a certain country that was just getting started across the pond, known as the United States of America. Okay, and these United States, I mean, a lot of these guys were smart. Okay, and this is going to touch on the quote conspiracy that we discuss here every week. Okay, because these banks really do control the world. But basically, many people, historians, real historians, not these clowns that teach in our so-called public schools today. Many people make the argument that the true reasons behind the American Revolution, or the major reason behind the American Revolution, which never gets talked about, was the American colonies' resistance to the central bankers. Okay, well, a lot of conspiracy groups call these guys banksters. I like to call them gang bankers, just like common gang bangers.
Right, right.
They're pretty much the same thing, except in, instead of wearing maybe gang colors and walking around with AK-47s, these guys are white collar, and they use the, goon squads like the IRS to enforce their illegal banking system. But when you peel the onion layers and the Harvard economists and the other jerk-offs that sit there and try to explain this away and defend it and all their stupid theories that they teach these Ivy League schools, Chicago University, when you peel all that stuff away, the New York Times and all this other nonsense, that's exactly what these banks are. It's just common everyday banks, gangbangers. Again, with ties and white collars. But anyway, so what was happening in the American Revolution was that the colonies were resisting the central bank, the concepts of central banking. They were trying to issue their own currencies, okay? They had, I can't remember, the colonial script, I believe, was the original name of the, the money that the many colonial governments, the fledgling central government of the colonies was trying to print. The bankers obviously didn't like it because they weren't loaning money and collecting interest on it. They weren't making money. Okay, so that was the major reason. The English government, the King of England, who was beholden to the bankers, because remember, the Bank of England was one of the most powerful over in Europe at the time. They weren't having it. Okay, if you were going to start a country, your currency was going to come from the central bank.
Exactly.
You were going to have a central bank. It was going to be the same criminals, and you were going to use our money, and we were going to charge you interest on it for the honor of spending our money. So, of course, the King of England complied. He took away the colonists' right to issue their own currency. You had things called the Intolerable Acts, okay, the Stamp Act, the Boston Tea Party, okay. It was, Boston Tea Party is an example. It wasn't just some, stupidity, some comic book nonsense, that they teach in schools, that they were mad because they had to pay a little bit of tax on tea, and, tea was popular. They didn't want to pay. It really wasn't that. Look, obviously, being English, they like their tea and this sort of thing, but that really wasn't the point. I mean, the point was more of a general principle, was that the colonists knew that English government could start taxing products at will, then the power to tax is the power.
Exactly, yeah.
Government, the power to control people, as we know today, with our system of taxation, and we'll get to that in a minute, okay? And then obviously they did away with, they're trying to do away with the colonist colonial script monetary system, which they did. Okay, and it just, for lack of a better word, just started pissing a lot of people off over in the States, over in the colonies, okay? And that really boiled over to the American Revolution, large part of the of the war, if not the whole thing, okay? Of course, the whole concept of no taxation without representation, again, the colonists realized that if a government, the King of England, could impose taxes on them without the colonists having representatives in the English government that could fight this or at least represent them and taxes were being levied, then they knew that their economy and commerce could be controlled and therefore they could be controlled. So in other words, control of the economy was control of the government and hence people's lives themselves. Okay, and Rothschild, I think Amschel Rothschild, which was the original, the father of the five central bankers I mentioned before, of those five nations. I mean, I believe it was him and one of his sons, but anyway, one of the members of the Rothschild family said, give me the power to issue a nation's currency, and I care not who makes its laws. Okay, and that's what he said, and it's true. Okay, so we can have any Joe Schmo loser, any of these losers, like get on TV and like a bunch of shills and yell at the screen, and you can have whoever you want, but if nobody is coming on TV and saying we need to eliminate this Federal Reserve system and the debt-based banking system while we're all dead in the water, unless they come out there and say it. No person can say that. I can't take anybody seriously, okay? That includes Donald Trump, okay? Because hopefully the picture's starting to form. But anyway, getting back to the United States now, as everybody knows, you had the American Revolution. Again, in large part to the situation with the England's desire to impose their economic will on the colonies. Okay, so the United States, by really divine miracle, okay, and even a lot of the colonists at the time and in life of George Washington, and then maybe we can spend the show on that.
Right, right.
The divine intervention, the seemingly so-called luck, like what many historians call luck, weirdos like me and people would call us at the time, ascribed it to really divine intervention. The way Washington was able to pull off victories and, win victories with a ragtag army, again, the most powerful army at the time. I mean, England, again, the sun never set on the English Empire, and that was really at its peak. And here come this ragtag bunch of disorganized rabble-rousers called the American Revolutionaries, and basically fought it to a standstill and eventually won, as we all know, or at least who knows what they teach in these schools these days. But be that as it may, people may remember after the Revolution, they had something called the Articles of Confederation, which was a loose-knit system of government where the states had eventually... It was a European-style government where each of the states was trying to issue their own currency and had their own economy, and the colonists realized it wasn't going to work. So they formed a central government. Now, one of the main arguments, the formation of the federal government, was whether or not to have a central bank like they had in Europe. Okay?
Right.
Alexander Hamilton, so-called Federalist Party, was one of the proponents of having a strong central bank. And, a lot of the Democrats/Republicans, led by Thomas Jefferson, were very much against having a central bank. Right? And not to get too deeply into the argument, I personally am disappointed that a guy like Alexander Hamilton apparently was a shill. Was a paid show for the central banking crime syndicate over in Europe, and he was Washington's right hand man, and he was a Revolutionary War hero. Of course, one of the writers of the Constitution and the Federalist Papers, and one of the major founding fathers of the system we have today. So, not to get into the debate on Alexander Hamilton, but nonetheless, the biggest knock on the man was that he was a proponent of the central banking system, and the central bankers won out. Okay, so in other words, in the original Constitution, in Article 1, Section 8, I believe it is, you know, gives Congress the function to coin money, okay, to the United States, or set the value of money.
Yes.
Okay. That's Congress's responsibility. Okay. I think the Treasury is actually technically under the executive branch, but it was Congress's responsibility, to have, be in charge of commerce. And of course, all of, spending bills are supposed to originate in Congress, but who knows what goes on today with Obama? I mean, the floodgates of lawlessness are open. If the law allowed it, it's supposed to be the Constitution. But anyway, the power to set currency rates and exchange rates and was given to Congress in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. Okay, but the central bank basically overrode all that, and the central bank became the issuer of currency. Okay, so that ability was taken out of the hands of the United States Congress, okay, and given to the central banks. Now, this system, the first central bank came into power, 1796.
Okay. Okay.
And it was not, it was never, it was never supposed to be like that. Okay. So, no, the Alexander Hamilton crowd won out. And we had a central bank. And basically, what happened was that that we had a private bank, okay, issuing the nation's currency. Now, this came up for a renewal in 1816, okay? So, and just like, it was a 20-year charter that the central bank had, okay? So, basically, what happened was that it was renewed, okay, in, 1816, okay? And what happened was Andrew Jackson, and some people may remember Andrew Jackson became president in 1828, and Andrew Jackson, like many of the politicians of the day, when we had real politicians, I mean, if these guys weren't perfect, and, a lot of the arguments and this sort of thing that we have today, that we actually did have, I mean, the founders were far from perfect, but be that as it may, Andrew Jackson recognized what a con job this so-called central bank, what it was doing again was charging, was issuing money and loaning it to the government, to the central government, and charging interest on it. So basically, Proverbs chapter 22:7, the debtor is slave to the lender, okay? And Andrew Jackson, being a religious man like many of the politicians back then, was a devout Christian, the sidebar, he was far from perfect. I mean, he was responsible for the Trail of Tears, routing Indians, I think it was down in Tennessee, and moving them off their reservations to so-called, federal reservations, and Andrew Jackson has a lot of knocks against him, but the one thing that makes him a hero to many Americans, including myself, his other shortcomings notwithstanding, was that he stood up to these central bankers, okay, and when he ran for election in 1828, I mean, his big mantra was, I'm going to get rid of the central bank. Okay, he was almost kind of like, in a sense, that Donald Trump of his day. Okay, he spoke out against the establishment at the time, which is really the same establishment we have today. But anyway, he ended up winning. And long story short, was that by the time he ran for re-election in 1832, he fought these guys to a standstill. Okay, and he made sure that even though the bank was going to be up for recharter after another 20 years, which would be 1836, he withdrew all the money that the United States government had deposited in this Federal Reserve System at the time and put it into private banks. So you had some competition to the Federal Reserve System, okay? And it basically, he withdrew all the money from the central banks, okay? And then, of course, the central banks didn't like this, and then they started a whole propaganda war against Jackson and called him all kinds of names and threatened to pull credit all over the nation. And, just what bankers do is they manipulate, they try to turn around and blame it on politicians. And as you'll see in a minute, the shill politicians today are nothing close to Andrew Jackson. They're just a bunch of losers and weasels and other names I can't really say as a Christian-based radio show, that names I can't really and should not really use. The politicians really are, but the political class. But anyway, he managed. He's the only president in history to fully pay off the national debt. Okay, now think about that for a minute, okay? The only president in history to fully remove the United States government from the shackles of this evil crime syndicate known as the Central Bankers of Europe, okay? So basically what happened from 1832, until 1913, was you had this running battle between the politicians of the United States, who really were, at the time, they came from a much better stock than these losers that we have today. You had this running battle with the central bankers. I mean, the most prominent example of this was Abraham Lincoln, okay, during the Civil War. For better or for worse, I mean, a lot of people, a lot of conspiracy kooks knock Abraham Lincoln, and they call him evil, and they say, well, he was really a gangster. Right. The southern states are really fighting for states' rights and independence from the North. And slavery was a symbol of the Civil War, okay, but it really wasn't the actual cause. The South had an agrarian economy, and the North was an industrial-based economy, and they were slapping tariffs, on European products, and the Europeans were retaliating. And to make a long story short, the retaliations, that helped the northern industry that came from Europe towards the United States were really affecting the South much more than the North, and the South became very obstinate and very resistive of the moves that the North was making, because it was helping the northern industry and hurting the South and driving them into poverty. It's created a lot of resentment. Okay, of course, the North looked down upon the South. And it really was a large anti-slave movement in the North. And all this was going on, but underneath the surface, you had these central bankers that hated the United States. Okay, they hated the concept of people having freedom and individuals having rights. Remember the Declaration of Independence, rights, endowed by our Creator. And so in parallel to all this, and Andrew Jackson, they still haven't forgotten about Andrew Jackson and how basically he kicked him out of the system. They didn't like being resistant. In other words, these are megalomaniacs. Okay, these are psychopaths, as we'll see as the show goes on. And they just didn't like the United States. They hated the concept of freedom. They hated the concept of people having rights. They hate people, okay? And this is in general, okay? These are the money changers going all the way back to the days of Christ in Matthew 23. It's the same, symbolically, it's the same crew, okay? Remember, Jesus says, how can you escape being condemned to hell? Now, he was talking to the Pharisees, but part of the Pharisees were the money changers, okay? A couple of days before his crucifixion, Jesus, for the second time, had chased these guys out of the temple with whips. Okay, so symbolically, these are the central banks. These are the central bankers, okay? But anyway, getting back to Abraham Lincoln, now he's, I personally look at the man, he was between a rock and a hard place, okay? I give the guy credit, I'm more pro-Lincoln than anti-Lincoln, and, you know, that's neither here nor there. You know, many people disagree with that and say Lincoln, you know, real constitutionalist and this sort of thing. I say, oh, Lincoln was a, he was a federal government guy, and, you know, he cracked down on the southern states because they were looking at,
okay,
they were looking to break away, and he didn't like to tie it. But anyway, what was Lincoln doing was issuing something called greenbacks. Okay, he ordered the United States Treasury to issue money called greenbacks, which they did, and this became the legal tender of the Northern government for a time. And look what happened to the Lincoln. Okay, he was assassinated under very suspect circumstances. As was Andrew Jackson, by the way, or there was an attempt on his life, and it turned out that the guy that tried to kill him was tied to Rothschild banking interest over in Europe. Okay, and a few years later, a lesser-known president known as James Garfield came out, and he was shooting his mouth off. I think, 1882 or 1880, James Garfield became president. Okay, and he was assassinated. McKinley was another president around the turn of the century. He was very resistant to the central bankers, and J.P. Morgan, okay, and he was assassinated. Okay, so you're starting to see a pattern emerge here. And the two most powerful banking families that came about in the 1800s in the United States were Rockefeller and J.P. Morgan, okay? They got their money. They got their start with loans from Rothschild banking interests, okay? So there's five families that we mentioned before that were funding, you know, most of the major governments of Europe were funding Rockefeller and J.P. Morgan, plus lesser-known names, Carnegie's, Vanderbilt, Astor's, okay? All the big banking families of the United States, so-called Valor Barons, were funded by the central bank. So fast forward, 1913, okay, well, a few years before that, you had all kinds of panics through what was happening with the banks. The central bankers wanted their central bank back. Remember, way back in 1832, Andrew Jackson had got rid of the central bank system, eventually ran these guys out of the country and had a lot of them arrested and this sort of thing. But these guys, like leeches, never really went away, as we've explained, okay, in a very brief sense. But anyway, the year is just before 1913, they started a major push to reestablish a central bank in the United States. Okay, in 1913, they finally succeeded. Okay, they got a group of these guys, went down to the island, Georgia, okay, and there's a physical island, and that's not a fact. You can go visit it today. There's a museum there, okay, it's called Jekyll Island, Georgia. They all got on a train, and it's secret. They wrote up the laws and how this bank would operate, and they gave it to their man in the Senate, a guy by the name of Aldrich, okay, and who was basically a grandfather to Rockefeller, you know, to the modern Rockefeller family, okay, but anyway, the Senator Aldrich is the one that presented the bill to Congress, and on almost midnight on Christmas Eve in 1913, this bill was passed. Many in Congress had already taken off for Christmas holidays, and I'm still not sure. It's still a little fuzzy whether the bill was legally passed or whatever. You know, people say, "Well, the conspiracy kooks and all this." You know, people say, "Well, you know, the Federal Reserve Act was never officially passed." Whatever shenanigans went on, okay, the bottom line is that on December 24th, 1913, the United States finally was wrestled into submission, and we got our central bank, and today we know it as the Federal Reserve System. Okay, but without going into too much of the detail, the point is, again, the original, as it was set up originally, the original Federal Reserve System was called that as a deception, okay? In other words, it's not federal. There are no reserves. I mean, how can there be any reserves if the bank operated out of with debt, okay? So think about what a bank Okay, so on December 24, 2013, you had this new system, okay, and it was owned, you know, again, it's hard to ascertain, even today, who really owns this thing, but suffice it to say that the big banking families, most notably J.P. Morgan, Rockefeller, and Rothschild banking interests represented by a guy by the name of Paul Warburg, established it on December 24th, 1913, okay, and basically, the way it worked, as originally laid out, was that it was an entirely debt-based system. Okay, so in other words, let me make a very simple analogy. In other words, if you're the United States government and I'm the Federal Reserve System, the way it works is you want to spend money. Now, you need money to pay your mortgage and pay your bills and make your car payment. The way you get your money is you come to me and I say, all right, Neil, you need $1,000 this month.
Right, right.
Or whatever. Here's $1,000. It's like, okay. You know, so then month number two goes along and, you know, Neil, you're still here. I mean, you still got to make all your payments again. Plus now you owe me $1,000. Well, how are you going to pay me back? Well, is it possible for you to pay me back? Because I'm the source of your money to begin with. So now, plus I'm charging you interest. Let's just say I charge you 10% interest, and I'm just pulling numbers out of the air. So now, at the end of, let's just do it by years. Let's just say at the end of year number one, Neil, you now owe me $1,100. Well, how are you going to pay me back? I mean, think about that. Think about the simplicity.
Exactly.
Of the scam. I mean, it's at a very basic level. What I'm explaining to you and to people that are listening, and you know, again, you're not going to hear this on Fox News, but in the very real sense, I'm explaining the workings of how the Federal Reserve System worked as it was originally set up. So in other words, now you've spent $1,000. Now there's $1,000 out there in circulation, 1,000 of these so-called Federal Reserve notes. Okay, now I'm trying to get you interest. So at the end of year one, you owe me $1,100. So the only way to keep the scam going is you got to borrow. Next year, you got to borrow $1,100.
Exactly.
Okay, so you're pumped along now, Neil. Okay, all right, Neil, here's $1,100. So give me $1,000, or give me $100 back because you remember you owe me interest. So now you're in debt to me to $2,000. Now guess what happens at the end of year two? Now you owe me $2,200.
Right.
But you still got to pay $1,000. You still got to pay for your war machine.
Exactly.
You still got to pay for your everything, the government. So very simply, and all I'm doing is I'm the Federal Reserve System. I'm just writing it down on a ledger. Okay, Neil owes me now at the end of year three. You know, Neil owes me $3,300. And remember, this is compound interest, and I'm just calling it just mm-hmm. for purpose of the example. Yeah. Yeah. Of course, if people understand compound interest, basically. It's like bacteria. I mean, people have biology. I mean, you know, it's not just exponential growth or geometric growth or whatever you want to call it. So in other words, if you take 10% interest, it's not just a linear increase. It's a percentage. If you take 1.1 and you go to a power of, say, 10, you know, at the end of 10 years, it's not just, you know, a linear increase. It's a geometric increase. In other words, interest is collecting interest. Okay, that's increasing exponentially. And that is the situation we find ourselves in today. Okay, now, originally, as it was set up, okay, you were able, in the beginning, to keep the scam, you know, to cover up the scam, you were able to exchange your so-called Federal Reserve note for gold. Okay, it was a gold-backed currency for a time. Okay, but really, the intent was to just issue debt. Okay, and without getting, you know, going off.
Exactly.
Basically what happened is in 1971 was that President Nixon took the United States 100% off the gold standard. So the United States, so in other words, that allowed the banksters or the gangbangers to do was just issue money without any discipline at all, because at least when the Federal Reserve System was set up, at least had a little bit of discipline that was applied to it, because people could come in and exchange their Federal Reserve notes for gold. And then it became, you know, eventually it was less and less, you know, it took more Federal Reserve notes to get the same amount of gold issued, but at least there was a little bit of a gold standard or gold-backed currency. But Nixon, you know, the banker's tool, the Rockefeller shill, Nixon.
Right.
completely took us off the gold standard. Okay, so in other words, you can't exchange the Federal Reserve notes for gold. And I see where, you know, as usual, you know, time is going a lot quicker than I'm explaining this. And, you know, but basically, suffice it to say that we are now completely off the gold standard in this nation. Now, look, you can go in and...
And so all they do is just keep printing money, Rob. And at one point, we're going to be like Germany. We're going to be like the days of the Civil War, where the money's going to be worthless, right?
Exactly. That's mathematically where it's going. I mean, that's what I'm building up to, is that what's happening, or what's happened... Okay, so let me just back up for a second. So what people may be wondering, well, what about the gold? So another way to look at this, just to stick with the gold situation for a second, is inflation. Okay, this helps explain inflation. Now, people will sit there and say, well, the price of gold is going up. You know, before, let's say, you know, you were able to get gold, you know, $500 an ounce, and now it's $1,000 an ounce. And you know, the gold markets are rigged, by the way. That's another whole big quote conspiracy you can probably spend an entire show talking about. Not that I'm an expert on gold markets. I mean, there are guys out there that do this stuff for a living. But suffice it to say that the paper gold market is manipulated. So just as an aside, if you're out there and you think you own gold because you have, you know, you're buying gold certificates and you haven't taken physical possession of the gold that you think you own, you don't own anything. Okay, and it's not just people that are suffering this anyway. It's entire nations. Okay, for example, the entire nation of Germany right now is trying to get gold back from the New York Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve is basically, in so many words, is telling them to go F off, and telling Germany it's going to take you 7 years for us to get your gold back. So what they're doing is they're kicking the can down the road, but the gold's not there. Okay, so the whole gold market is a scam in and of itself. But anyway, by taking us off the gold standard, it's removed any discipline, and it's also an indicator of inflation. So in other words, what's happening when, you know, say back, you know, 4 years ago, and I'm just, again, picking random numbers. I mean, they're not exactly correct, but you got the conceptually is what I'm saying. You know, let's just say 4 years ago, if the price of gold was $500 an ounce, okay, and today it's $1,200 an ounce, it's not that the demand for gold has necessarily doubled in 40 years. And what's really happened is that, as you just mentioned, the government, the United States central government, has printed so much money. Of course, they have to remember, they have to keep borrowing in perpetuity. They have to borrow in perpetuity, as I explained before. You know, every year, remember, at the end of every year, Neil's got to pay his mortgage and make his car payment and whatever. The only way he does that is by borrowing money from me, the central bank. But eventually, all that money goes into circulation, and that's really inflation, because now you have the same, you basically have a fixed United States economy. You have a certain number of factories, you sell a certain number, exactly, of products, but you have the central government just pumping more and more money into the economy. And this is, and people just accept this, by the way. People just say, oh, that's inflation. And but really, what many conspiracy kooks, I call conspiracy kooks, but people that really understand the economy, like in the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, and I strongly suggest people really want to understand this and go into much more detail in it, and probably explain it in a much better way than I'm doing right now. I'm just painting everything with a very broad brush, but to really get into the history of it, you know, again, Edward Griffin, The Creature from Jekyll Island, everything I'm saying is corroborated, by the way, in that book, and there's others. But anyway, what's really happening with inflation, it's not really an inflation that, you know, look, if you have five houses and 10 people, you know, want to buy five houses, you know, they all bid against each other, they drive the price up. What's really happening is the federal government is issuing so much debt-based currency from the Federal Reserve System that there's just more money in circulation, so the price of everything goes up. I mean, look, think back. I mean, I remember 40 years ago. I mean, you know, what did a new house cost in New Jersey? You know, say $20,000. I mean, that same house today is probably $2 million. Okay,
right.
And look, okay, there was a certain amount of demand in there, but really, you know, the demand of that house didn't go up by 10 times. What happened is there's so much money in circulation that it's just getting passed around, okay? And people just sit there and accept these idiots, these Harvard economist idiots, these Fabian socialist morons like Paul Krugman, who writes for the New York Times, said, you know, debt is good and you have to go into debt. The government has to spend money and to stimulate the economy to get, you know, to get the economy moving. He said, no, it doesn't, you idiot. Okay, all they're doing is mathematically, it's just borrowing more, it's just digging the hole deeper and getting themselves deeper entrenched into the Federal Reserve System. Okay, and there are politicians that spoke out and tried to resist the system. Again, I've mentioned a few of the names, but even after this, the most famous of these is a president known as JFK or John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Okay, and what he did was he issued an executive order 1110, okay, 11110, and which basically authorized the United States Treasury to start issuing debt-free coins. So we're just right. Like Lincoln's greenback, a hundred years before, you know, JFK, and some of these coins made it into circulation. Now, of course, you know what happened to JFK. You know, within a year, you know, he was killed by the only bullet in history that defied the laws of conservation of air and all laws of basic physics. His head was blown off in broad daylight, and that's what other politicians like, hey guys, don't cross us. Okay, and of course you had, you know, LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, you know, yeah. A sellout Democrat up in writing for him, and you know, basically rescinded, you know, whatever Kennedy did in regards to the central bank, and you know, of course started borrowing even more money. And got us into some useless war known as Vietnam, okay, which Kennedy was trying to get us out of. And that's another thing as an aside. Okay, wars are very profitable for these guys. Obviously, you know, like the Iraq so-called war on terror, okay, and this sort of thing. Okay, you know, trillions and trillions of dollars of extra debt. It's just the more debt is issued, the more these guys
exactly.
Have money. Okay, and it's basically the way the whole system works. The whole thing is a sham, okay? It's a debt-based scam. Again, Proverbs 27, the debtor is slave to the lender. That's the key to remember in this whole thing, okay? But the system right now is so pervasive that you just can't get rid of it. It's so much a part of the life of America. I mean, we're so used to it that people don't even question it anymore, but what I'm saying, what I'm explaining in this hour is, I admit it must be like throwing cold water onto people. If you're listening to this, this information is new to you, and you're probably sitting there saying, maybe this guy's crazy, and that's fine. I'm used to it. You know, I've had, you know, friends and even people that, you know, laugh at me, and, you know, I've been on radio shows, I've been laughed off the radio, and these sort of
right.
You know, calling all these guys liars that run the system, but, you know, so I don't care what idiot economists, what these guys from Harvard and Chicago University, MSNBC, I don't care what these morons have to say. The bottom line is, today, in 2015 or 2016 or whatever, I mean, literally, the United States government goes into debt to the tune of $1 billion
oh my gosh.
Every 4 hours, mathematically. So think about that. Okay, in rough numbers, the United States, the taxes that we collect, or the federal government collects with Federal Reserve Goon Squad, this SS, like organization known as the IRS, the IRSS, okay, which was invented, you know, by the way, right about the time the Federal Reserve System, you know, had the enforcement arm of this Federal Reserve System, the IRS, by the way. Okay, so what they've done is they set it up, and you know, they set up the central bank, and they set up its own collection agency known as the IRS. So basically, we can't escape from the clutches of this thing. Which, the way it is right now, we just can't escape it. Okay, I mean, we can. You know, somebody like JFK came along, and you know, or Ron Paul tried to do in the last presidential election.
Right,
sure how far he got. But anyway, there's no way to get rid of this thing at this point. But basically, if you think about it, this was a, you know, excellent for the weasel politicians, because what it allowed people like Chuck Schumer and LBJ and even these so-called liberal Republicans and all these other losers, what it has allowed them to do for the last 100 years is to basically spend without any restraint. So it's allowed the government. So just think about it. You know, how can the United States government just take a step back and think about this? I mean, all our industry is gone. I mean, let's just say in the last 40 to 50 years, all the legitimate industry of this nation is gone. And really, we've become, you know, I guess the word is right now, what's the word? Service economy. Okay, that's what they call us. Oh, healthcare is a big industry, and, you know, entertainment and hotels and all this other
stuff. Right,
and all
yes.
Other nonsense. But basically, I mean, think about it. The only way to really generate revenue for your nation is you got to sell things people want. Okay? And we're just not doing that. Okay? Especially in the last 4 years. So how did the scam work? All the University of Chicago hack so-called economic experts aside, and all these douchebag politicians, okay, all these people aside, you have to say, wait a second, how is this really working? How is the United States making money? We don't sell things anymore. We don't sell cars. We don't sell steel. We don't sell products. I mean, all we're really doing, all we have been doing to keep this scam known as the United States economy going is that we keep borrowing money from this Federal Reserve central banking system. Okay, and even that is going to break down.
Yeah.
Today, in 2016, okay, there's people, nations everywhere have gotten onto the scheme and say, wait a second, you know, why are we borrowing or loaning these people so much money? And then let me just explain this. Again, I'll try to explain this in 2 minutes. Okay, the beginning. You know, we were borrowing money from the Federal Reserve System, but after a while, what happened with so many dollars in circulation and with the government's insatiable appetite to spend money on wars, welfare, and interest, okay, what it needed to do, it would be too much of a scam. The central bankers knew this, to keep borrowing money from the central bank. So what basically started happening was that our sellout politicians, both Democrat and Republican, by the way, Democrats are just better at it. But anyway, what they started to do was, instead of the Federal Reserve itself borrowing the government's debt, in other words, if the government needs money, you know, floats a bond known as a treasury bill, and, you know, people loan it money and it spends it. What the United States government started to do was to sell bonds to foreign nations like China and Japan, or, you know, you can go to the bank and buy a United States savings bond and all this other thing. So to cover up this thing, his foreign governments started, you know, quote, buying our debt, which basically means that, you know, at the end of every year, say, you know, the government needs, you know, $3 trillion to keep operating. It would float these treasury bills, and foreign governments like China would, because they were selling us so many products. Remember, you know, like a country like China has so much United States dollars because, you know, we're buying all that crap and sending our money over there, plus, you know, Bretton Woods, which I didn't even really get into, time to get into right now, but Bretton Woods Agreement back in 1944, basically what it did is it set up a so-called petrodollar system, which basically means any oil sold in the world had to be bought in United States dollars, okay, which also created an artificial demand for the United States dollar. So all this money, all this fake money that was being created to keep this animal, this insatiable beast known as the United States war machine slash welfare state going, a lot of the dollars to keep this going were sucked up
right
by these foreign governments. They needed the dollars. They're buying the United States debt, okay, or they're looking for the United States dollars to basically to buy oil to keep their own economies going, okay? But a lot of nations are getting smart to this. I mean, even China, in the last several years, and you're not hearing about this on the radio or on the news.
No.
Fox News, okay? You watch Fox News, I mean, you know, I was watching the headlines this morning. They had this female quartet, this barbershop quartet. They had this other guy, you know, broke into a Five Guys restaurant and was eating hamburgers. This is national news, is my point, okay?
Right.
Besides it's not from the presidential election scam. But what's happening behind the scenes that you're not hearing about, you have to go on a conspiracy kook website. So there are a lot of these nations, most notably China and Russia, and saying the hell with this United States dollar in this system, and they're quietly dumping the United States treasury holdings. So it's the United States dollar. So which China's not buying our bonds anymore. Okay, so secretly what's having to happen is that the United States government itself, and they call this quantitative easing. Okay, put that in. It's a fancy name for outright money printing. Okay, the United States government knows that when they float a bond now, China and Russia and these other nations aren't there anymore to buy these
exactly.
bonds.
I mean, but what about when China finally wants their money? What are we going to do?
Well, let me just explain what's happening. Again, this is a very general sense. This is how I understand it, and I'm just trying to digest it and break it down for people the way I understand it. It is a little more complicated than, but not really. Okay, at the end of the day, okay, you know, look, an engine on a car may be complicated. At the end of the day, what's happening is you put gas in your car, you know, you have spark plugs. You know, the gas, that explode the gas and, you know, drives a piston and that drives a crankshaft and that's what turns the wheels on your car. Okay. And that's the analogy. Okay. That's the level that I'm explaining to people on the system. And obviously, you know, it's a lot more complicated than that. But then, in the other sense, it's not really. I'm just giving you the big picture. But basically, what's happening with China, for example, they're saying the hell with you people and they're taking the dollars that they have. That they've bought, okay. You know, in other words, hey, United States, you know, you need $1 billion. Here's $1 billion cash from all the crap that we sold you, which you sent all your factories over here. We have all this money. We don't know what to do with, so we'll buy some more of your bonds and collect interest on it. And that's made money on it, you know, in interest payments. And at the same time, it's funding our scam government. What's happening is China's saying, hell with you people. We know it's only a matter of time. You know, you idiots over there being us. You know, you keep printing money to cover your welfare payments and your illegal immigrants and your stupid endless wars. But what China's been doing the last several years is, number one, is buying gold anywhere and everywhere they can find it very secretly. And they've been dumping the United States Treasury holdings. Okay, and what they're doing with the dollars that they do have is they're coming over here to the United States and buying up American companies and real estate wholesale. Okay, so all over the country.
90 seconds.
Wow.
In many places all over the nation, the Chinese are moving in. Because what they're doing is it's almost like a game at this point. While the United States dollar still has this fake value, it's still living on its industrial past. United States are being, or the Chinese are being smart. They're buying up United States real estate wholesale. And the Russians, and this is all going on while we speak, by the way. And not one politician, you know, Trump might allude to this a little bit.
60 seconds.
A politician, this idiot, Bernie Sanders, I'm going to give you free college, free health care, I'll provide you a living wage. You schmuck, and you stupid college kids that listen to you, you schmucks. Do you understand what an idiot? Do I understand? Like, I sound so jaded at this point with a guy like Bernie Sanders, even Hillary. I mean, Hillary's just a refined version of Bernie Sanders. I mean, she just sounds a little more intelligent and more refined, but she's in the same shill, the same moron, the same idiots follow her, and these Republicans, too. Now, you can, hopefully, I've conveyed why I'm so jaded, and I sound so acidic right now. In my
10 seconds. I mean,
hopefully, people understand, or at least have a sense of what's going on, right, and how our economy really works. In other words, our economy is a scam. Okay?
Right.
And another thing, real quickly, in other words, in our whole tax, our system of taxation is a scam too. If you think about it. Okay, if people should be asking questions, well, why can't why does anybody have to work? Why does anybody have to do anything? If we can just go to this Federal Reserve System and just borrow money, why not just have the central bank just print money at will? And the answer is they can. They can if they want to, but they don't, because if they did that, if there wasn't this IRS and this taxation system, this scam taxation system, then it would be so much more obvious that what we really have in this nation, our economy, is a money-printing scam. Think about what I'm saying, okay?
Yeah, oh, well, so again,
and I guess we're at the time.
Yeah, but boxofsunglasses.com for more information, purchase the book, and also follow you at Rob Roselli. Rob, again, that's scary. That's one of the major parts of your book in the Federal Reserve System. If they continue to print money, we're going to run out. And then when we have no money, what are we going to do?
And what's going to run out? What's going to run out is the scam. Okay, we're never going to run out of money. Okay, we're going to be wallpapering our walls with it, just like in Zimbabwe.
Yeah, but it'll be worthless.
That's what's going to happen. If people become more and more wake up to the scam, and the whole economy is basically, you know, a money printing scam, and it has been for 100 years, and we've been sold out by our politicians. Then the fun begins. Okay? Then people are going to. That's why I'm saying get prepared now, because it's crashing. Okay, it's finally crashing here in 2016. The scam is up. The jig is up. Whatever you want to call it. The wars, the welfare, all of a sudden the cylinder, the
gotcha.
Payments, okay, the whole tax system, it's all coming down, and it's going to come down hard and fast. And again, boxofsunglasses.com is the site, and I think we're out of time.
All right, take care, Rob. Next week, more talk, more interesting talk about the Federal Reserve and much more. Take care, man.
All right,
bye-bye. All right, that was the Total Spotlight Show. Take care, everyone.
T-Mobile's unlimited plan costs $95 per month for a smaller network, plus monthly taxes and fees. It's enough to wreck your day. Cricket's unlimited plan gives you a bigger network for $25 less per month, with monthly taxes and fees included. Cricket Wireless, something to smile about.
Download speeds max of 8 megabits per second LTE and 4 megabits per second 4G. Price comparison based on one smartphone line with unlimited plan. Mobile hotspot not available. Activation, other fees, and restrictions apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Terms, features, and restrictions subject to change. See store for details.